Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Small Biz Talk Radio. I'm Lori Leiker with Small Biz Coaching and Consulting here in Austin, Texas. And I'm speaking to you today from Orange Coworking, one of the great coworking sites here in Austin. We're awaiting our guest, Mr. Michael Ross. He's developed and founded Mainstream Life Solutions, which is not only, they do not only life coaching, but they also coach corporations on their corporate culture. And when we're talking about corporate culture, a lot of times people don't understand that there is a difference between corporate culture and business culture. And Mr. Ross is joining us right now, live on the air. Welcome to the show, Mr. Ross. I appreciate you being with us today.
Hey, Lori, how are you doing today?
Great. Tell us a little bit about Mainstream Life Solutions.
Yeah, actually, glad you asked that. We're actually changing our name this year. It actually was just announced. We're changing to the Mainstream Leadership Network. The reason for doing that is because, you know, our passion has always been to help leaders, because leaders affect the most people. So we figure if you get to the leaders and you really help them understand how to build great cultures, how to lead people properly, then they'll be able to set up the environment so people can have a fulfilled, impactful life. And ultimately, the mission at Mainstream is to help people live fulfilled, impactful lives. And our strategy by doing that is to go for leaders and really try to affect leaders' lives because, again, they affect the most people. They were founded
in
2000. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just giving you a little history that we were founded in 2010 and started out with just me, myself, and I. And we've grown, and we have not only our 10 staff members, but we have over 20 different people in our network now who can do training, coaching, and teaching with us. So it's been a great ride, and so I'm just, again, happy to be here with you today.
I really appreciate it. One of the things that people talk about when they talk about culture in companies, they think it has to be large companies. But really, every freelancer, every solopreneur also has their own culture. How does that develop as a company grows?
Yeah, absolutely. So I totally 100% agree with you. And I think what happens is that for a lot of companies, they don't really start paying attention to culture until they're larger, because they, you know, what typically happens, at least for me, when I get called in to go into a company and help with the culture, is there's something wrong. And I'd really like it if people would start by building it right to begin with. But typically what happens is I come in and I begin to evaluate. And what you see in any culture is built on values. And the values are the things that bond everyone together. The values are what brings market value to that company. And so typically, you know, a company will begin to build on a product or a service that, you know, hits the market well. And so as the company grows, there's values that they use to help it grow, but if they don't write those down, if they're not intentional about living those, you know, once you get past the first or second layer of people that you've hired, you know, those values can be lost if they're not regularly lived, regularly talked about. If you're not hiring people who already fit those values to begin with, you'll start to lose a bit of yourself. And so that's where problems begin to come in. That's when problems with systems and, you know, strategy, operation, administration start to take place in the company. So they bring somebody like me in to evaluate, and then what I do is I go back to the brass tacks, to the values, and I say, this is what you were built upon, or this is what you espouse. Now let's see if we're really living them. Let's see if they're affecting our systems. Let's see if they're affecting our strategy, our operations, our administration. And typically what you find in unhealthy cultures is they don't. And so what I always tell the solo entrepreneurs or entrepreneurs with just a few employees, I tell them, you know, if you really want to grow and you want to grow healthily, start with those values, start with your mission, and don't make them just some words on a wall. Don't make it a checklist that, oh, you know, I got a new company, I got to check off these values and make sure I have three and they're defined. They have to be the lifeblood of how you live, because values are what bond people together. Values are more important to people than their own lives. People will die for their values. As Patrick Henry said, give me liberty or give me death. So we know that values are the number one value to people. So why not build a business on them? And what we find is when people do that, not only do those people work more efficiently together, but they work harder. They work longer hours. They're doing something they feel is bigger than themselves, and they do everything in their power to take care of the customer and client. But what also happens is the relationships within the company then grow on much deeper level because they're doing something bigger than themselves.
And really, it starts with the corporate why. Why did you start this business? Why are you doing what you do? And then you build from there.
Yes, yes, absolutely. So, you know, when you talk about the why, it's great. It's, you know, even asking the secondary why question, you know. So, you know, businesses, especially for-profit businesses, I mean, business is in business to make a profit, you know. But then you look at, okay, if I'm to make a profit, well, why? You know, so what happens if, you know, we get past that, again, that base level where the entrepreneur who starts the business or the leader of the organization, the CEO, has more than they know what to do with. Well, what are you going to do with the money then? So why do you really want the money? And what is your mission at the end of the day? What are you trying to do with your product or service? You know, when you get that out to the world, what do you expect it to do? Why are you doing what you're doing? And that, you know, it's so relevant. And that goes in line with the vision of the company, which is, you know, again, when you talk about values and mission, very important to a culture. But then there has to be a vision because people want to be taken somewhere. People want to know where they're going. So many times in organizations, the leaders are not clear about where they're going, why they're doing what they're doing. So what you find is people get tired. They get bored. They start looking for other things because people want to be taken on a journey, like Aerosmith said in the song Amazing, you know, life's a journey, not a destination. And so true with an organization as well as with our personal lives. So you're so right, Laurie, in saying that why is very important.
And it's very easy, though, when you grow quickly, especially in today's business world, you find companies that start red hot, and then all of a sudden they've lost their culture, and they don't realize it until it's too late. What are some things that you recommend when people are starting to experience growth? What are some changes that they can make to help manage that growth a little bit better to keep that why in front of them?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, you know, it's something for me, as I said earlier, one of the reasons we changed our name to the Mainstream Leadership Network is because I think it ultimately comes down to the leadership, that the leaders can never grow weary in serving and helping people be their best. And it can happen, mm-hmm. you know, and so we're big on leaders need to have balance. You know, it can't be all work and no play, and you can't be all play and no work. There has to be a fine balance in the eight major areas of life. And so we're big on, you know, let's coach with a leader. Let's find out where the drains are happening. You know, some leaders, they grow fast because they're working 16 hours a day. As Gary Vaynerchuk likes to say, they're working their face off. And then, you know, they mm-hmm. grow, and then they get to that level, which success is great. You know, anyone who's won something or has achieved something that they strive for, success is great, but it's also fleeting. You know, so it really has to be about fulfillment and about creating balance, not just for you, but for others in your organization. And if leaders do that and they get away from the achievement trap, you know, typically they won't burn out. But the way to protect your culture as you grow is that the leaders have to say to themselves that they're never going to stop growing. Now, there were some statistics that came out, you know, a few years ago by a King researcher named Anders Ericsson. And Anders Ericsson had studied, you know, leaders for 25 years. And here's what he found out. It's pretty funny. He found out that the two most common characteristics of successful people are this. Number one, they are continual and voracious learners. So they're constantly learning, mm-hmm. constantly growing, constantly taking in new things. And then the second one is they practice what they learn. You know, we say that, it's so funny because it's like, well, yeah, but there really is a delineation between those who learn a lot and those who practice it. And so leaders have to be the ones who are saying, you know what, I'm never going to stop learning and practicing. I am going to learn, but I'm also going to take absolute immediate action on the ideas that compel me. And if they do that, they set that precedence and that bar. And if they're sharing their vision, if they're constantly, you know, perpetuating the values and the mission with the team will continue to follow. But what you'll find, Laurie, in a lot of organizations where there's quick growth and leaders get, I don't know if the word is full of themselves or they just get complacent. You know, I know one set of leaders that are now an international company. They started out as a solo entrepreneurship. They have over 300 people, you know, worldwide. And they have said to me again and again, we never believed we could ever get to this level. So they struggle with being complacent because it is, you know, they've grown far beyond their wildest dreams. But what they have done that is so good is they've gotten people in their lives to hold them accountable and to continue to push them. Because it's so easy once you get to a level to go, hey, you know what, this is great. But what happens when you do that is your people will outgrow you. And once they outgrow you, there'll be some people that outgrow you. Once they outgrow you, they become the pseudo leaders, which causes friction, again, in the culture. It causes an environment that's a bit shaky. There can be, you know, complaining and arguing and murmuring. And then that person, if they pass up the leader that they're with, they can't help themselves. They have to leave. They'll end up leaving. And unfortunately, when a leader stops growing in the organization, they always lose their best people. And that's where, you know, to protect the culture, the leaders have to continue to grow. And that has to be something they fall in love with, is the process of growth and not necessarily trying to reach destinations all the time.
And as a business process coach, I work with a lot of companies on managing their turnover. And one of the things that I've found is that leaders who start out as leaders, sometimes because something happens, they become managers. They stop focusing on the leading and start focusing on the management portion of it. And they stop thinking, well, this is what's going to be best for my team in terms of communicating and things like that. And they move over into, I've got to get this task done. And it seems to happen as companies get bigger and bigger. How do you work with companies to avoid that kind of pitfall?
Yeah, that is such a great question. And that whole dichotomy, but also symbiosis between leadership and management. You know, you got to have both in an organization. It's not, you know, management's evil and leadership's great, or leadership is fluff and management's the way to go. You know, you hear all sides. They are symbiotic, but they can also be a dichotomy as well. And one thing that I try to do is I always try to remind leaders that systems run the business and people run the systems. So you've got to manage systems and you've got to lead people. So yes, the tasks at hand are really, they're always going to be a part of our natural progression. But what we should really be doing as leaders is focusing on helping every individual on our team grow. And Laurie, I don't think you'd ever disagree with me on this, is I really would love it if leaders, every leader out there would go through coach training, because the greatness of a leader is to draw the greatness out of their people. And so, you know, you can put task lists up. You know, I've got a degree in project management. I could write out a project plan. We put it on the wall. We got our milestone markers, our critical path. And you know, at the end of the day, that system is great. But if I don't have people who are willing to grow and stretch themselves, then I am going to become a quote-unquote manager, where I'm just going to have to give directives constantly. I'm going to have to constantly hold accountable and make sure they're meeting the deadlines. What I really like is to get people started, you know, in the beginning times where you're having them reach directives. Then you lead it more towards where the leader becomes more laissez-faire and they're backing out, and the team then takes over and begins to do it themselves. But the only way you can do that is by really coaching people to see their own greatness and to see what they're capable of, and then handing off and delegating task loads. It's my opinion, Laurie. I could be wrong about this, but, you know, thus far it's worked pretty well in the programs we've implemented. Is I always tell a leader, your job is really to work yourself out of a job. And, you know, the fear for a lot of leaders, and the fear there is, well, what use am I going to be? When a person gives their value away, they never cease to have a place. They will always have a place in an organization. A person who's willing to give value away always has a place. And that's what I always encourage leaders to do. And it's just so, it's so wonderful to see leaders step out, have less stress, and that, and that, and the team start to come together because they give a place for the team to come together.
Well, and they also, they're also making that team accountable to themselves, and the leaders then become the teachers. And so every leader that I train, I tell them, you really have to become a teacher. You've got to be prepared to be a trainer every single day, where you're training your people how to lead themselves, because then they're given their autonomy. When somebody feels they have their own, they control their destiny, they're going to be more loyal to an organization, more loyal to a leader, and they're going to stay longer, even if higher money is provided.
Absolutely. That's so true. That, you know, it's funny you said that. The number one reason, I mean, this is statistically proven for years and years and years, number one reason that a person will stay at an organization is that they invested in them personally, their own personal training and growth. You know, and it, and I'm sure you're in the same boat, Laurie, but I get, you know, I get, I'm very disappointed at how few companies value training and value coaching, you know, things like that. And, you know, once they see the value, you know, I've got plenty of statistics that, you know, show the difference between companies who do regular training and those who don't. Companies I've worked with, we've certainly collected a lot of data. And, you know, once they see the increase to the bottom line, they're okay to take the shot on it. But it, I would love for leaders to begin to come into this place where they're really seeing themselves as a person that's supposed to serve their team and help their team become their best. And if they do that, you know, the bottom line, you know, all the issues will take care of themselves as far as productivity, retention, increase of bottom line, you know, and expansion. All those things will take care of themselves if the leaders take care of their own people.
Mm-hmm. And build that loyalty. One of the things that I thought was really interesting in what you do in helping companies renovate their cultures is the way that you do your analysis. Can you take us through just a little bit of what your steps are when you go into a company who's saying, hey, we've got a problem here, we don't know what it is?
Yeah, so thanks for asking that question. Yeah, the first thing I do is I will first talk to the leaders, and I'm very straightforward, you know, especially when you work with family run companies, because, you know, some of the family run companies I've worked with, they have these, you know, certain set of rules and guidelines that are underlying assumptions just to the family, right? So what I try to tell them is, if you have issues, you know, first thing I like to be straightforward about is that you're probably the main issue. So I like to be very straightforward and let them know that, you know, the leadership, if you want to grow the company, the leadership has to change. But what I do from that point is we do some surveys with the team, and we just have 8 basic questions. And, you know, we're asking very, very basic metrics, scale of 1 to 10, rate your leaders, you know, how can they improve? How can you improve? And then we go through, you know, asking questions. What are the mission, vision, values of the organization? Where's your company going to be 5 years from now? What's the purpose of the existence of your organization? We ask the detailed questions. And what we find in the unhealthy cultures is they come back where people don't know. They don't know where they're going.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know the mission. They don't know the values. They certainly can't define them. And then what we do from that point, after we get that evaluation, we get the data back and we give the percentages, you know, and the metrics, the way we break it down is, you know, these leaders see that, you know, okay, only 15% of your people know your values. Only 10% of your people know your mission. Only 3% of your people know your vision, you know, and they begin to see, oh my gosh, we have been taking people, you know, in circles metaphorically, and, you know, these people want to go somewhere. So when we do that, and you just asked me to say how we evaluate. That's the main way we evaluate. So I'll just answer your question, and we can go on to the next part because I can go all day here.
Well, once you do your evaluation, I'm sure that one of the things that you come across is that companies will invite you in to do the evaluation. You bottom line it for them. You show them the data, and they go, well, that's not our fault, or they're unwilling to change. There's a bit of an ego component in there from the company standpoint because they're tied into their own processes because this is my process. I built this. I built this company. What do you do to help a company make that shift from this is me to this is us?
Yeah, that's great. I try to be very, very kind, but very firm at the same time, which is a tough balance sometimes to have. And, you know, with leaders, I think a lot of the times you got to hit them, you know, right between the eyes. But at the same time, I try to use data to let them know, okay, here's what you can expect if you don't change. What are the numbers right now? You can expect that and then a further decrease. That's what I always go through. If you do change, if you decide to change, I tell them you can expect a major increase, but not just that. You're going to find yourself with much more fulfillment. You're going to find yourself eager and loving to come to work yourself, you know, as, you know, you got the leader who's the owner and also the employee, right? And I say you're going to have a great place to work. You're going to have people who think you're the greatest thing since George Washington. You know, really, if you take this model, that is where you're going to go. But I promise you, if you do nothing, you're going to get more of the same, and it's probably going to get worse. Because over time, if you're doing the wrong things don't get better. They don't stay the same. They get worse. And so I try to just give them that straightforward approach. And that typically comes then to the next question is, okay, well, what do we do now? You know, so that's kind of how I do it. I like to have a conversation. I give case studies. I let them know, you know, who I've worked with in the past. I have both sides of the spectrum too, Laurie, where there's people who have taken our program and implemented it. And I've got the data on people in that realm. And I've got data from people who haven't. And we stayed up with them to see where they're at. And it's funny, people who haven't taken it, you know, we just got actually 2 weeks ago, right after Christmas time, I got an email from somebody who had asked us to come in 3 years ago and evaluate. And they said, you know, can we have another conversation? You know, I think we're ready to do something now. Because, you know, for me, I don't fight the data. You know, I'm an academic. You know, I spent and a consultant and, you know, a speaker and an author. But I try to give people data because the academics who are doing those studies are very vigilant. They have a high set of accountability. So I trust data. I trust science. And so I try to tell them, you know, very simple. Science is simple. If you do what successful people do, you have success. If you do what unsuccessful people do, you're not successful. And so I try to be straightforward.
And if you do the same things you've done all the time, all along, and you don't make any changes, you will always get the same result that you've always gotten.
I tell you, Laurie, when you say it like that, it's so funny because, you know, and I'm a business owner too. I own a few businesses. And I know, you know, Laurie, if you came in and you evaluated my culture and you came to me and you said, Michael, there's some things wrong, you know, that would sting. You know, it would hurt. I would go, oh, man. You know, but at the end of the day, that statement, as simple as it is, can be very difficult to accept. And then to have the courage, because I think it just takes courage to know something's wrong and to move in a new direction. You know, it's hard. Even me saying this on my side, who, you know, quote unquote, I know better, it still is difficult. So I think, you know, having a coach there, having somebody who is going to put their arm around you, which is why I love coaching, you know, more than consulting, is you know, put your arm around this CEO or this leader and you go, I'm going to walk through the process with you. And don't worry, I'm not going to make your decisions for you. I'm just going to help you and guide you to making the decisions that you should be making.
Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what the role is that we play as coaches. How do you find in cultures now with more millennials hitting the job scene, how do you find culture shifting now as opposed to 5 years ago?
Yeah, so, you know, the statistics show in 4 years, Laurie, 46% of the workforce will be millennials, you know. And I love millennials. I personally hired a couple millennials to run one of my organizations. I love them. But the shift is that there is definitely bias between the baby boom generation and the millennials. And it's, you know, the bias comes out, well, all they do is play video games and they're into technology and they're on their phones all the time. They don't know how to communicate and they don't. And, you know, I think it's one of those things, the law of attraction, you know, you're going to find whatever it is you're looking for. And I think that is the major thing. So now, do millennials have the classic work ethic like the baby boomers? And I will tell you, by and large, now there are exceptions to every rule, Laurie, just like there's a lot of baby boomers who have, you know, a technological bent, although a lot of them are behind. The millennials, by and large, do not have the classic work ethic that the baby boom generation do, but they have the whole idea of working smarter, not harder. But there are times, this is what I constantly try to preach to millennials, I say, there are times you're just going to have to grind and you're going to have to work through pain and you're going to have to go through it, because the baby boomers work so hard to set up their children with a better life and an easier path, that, you know, in a lot of cases, millennials didn't get that grind and that pain that's associated with success sometimes. So what I like to do is I like to bring them both together, kind of tell them both where they're coming from, and Generation Xers are certainly in there, you know, which I am one. And, you know, I look at myself as somebody who can bridge the gap between them. And so what I try to do is let them see both of their sides, and then I leave it to them. I say, you know, you got a choice to make. Either you guys can learn from each other and your differences, or you can fight against each other. And one or the two is going to create your environment. So there's definitely a challenge there. There's no doubt about it. But, again, I think as coaches, it's about presenting the information the best way we can and saying, we're here to help. We're here to help when you're frustrated. But what we're going to do is bring you guys together and facilitate a conversation. You know, we're not going to separate you guys and listen to you behind the scenes and try to keep you from each other. What we want to do is bring you together and have you talk through them. Because once you work through them, you'll begin to appreciate each other's differences and utilize each other's differences to make the whole organization better.
Exactly. Michael, this has been a fascinating conversation. I really appreciate you being on with us today. Where can people find you?
Yeah, so we're coming out with a new website soon, the mainstreamleadershipnetwork.com. But right now, they can go to www.mainstreamls.com, and they can reach me at michael@mainstreamls.com, and they can visit our website if they want some more information on anything. They can get it there. And if anyone will put in your name, Laurie, to the subject line, I will send them a copy of one of my books. So if they put your name in, Laurie Lelker, and if I pronounced it right, they will
enough.
Get a free
it's
book
one of those
me.
Tough names.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Thank you very much, Michael. Nope,
you're
good. Thank you very much. I appreciate you being with us today. We've been speaking with Michael Ross, mainstreamls.com. We've been talking about corporate culture. I'm Lori Liker with smallbizcoaching.net. can find me on Twitter at SmallBizCoachTX. I'd love to have you back next week. We'll talk to you then. Thank you.